Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love, as we come off of the Labor Day weekend, the relaxing weekend, before we really hit the political ground running, which we talked about last week a little bit. We're going to stick with some fun topics, though, this week. Our guest is David Wertheim. He is the event manager with Cold Iron Event Rentals. And you probably have seen them without knowing you've seen them at a lot of festivals around here. But one of their main events that they host
Hold on. I'm going to guess your favorite event of all time. Dinner en Blanc. I knew it. I knew you were going to sneak this in.
So it is shocking, I have to say. I am having trouble pinpointing. Phil, we do need to do, like, when did I start doing this? It's kind of a blur. But the fact that we haven't had somebody from Dinner en Blanc on before is shocking.
Especially since prior to my regular appearances on this podcast, you and Jason Williams used to go back and forth about the merits of this event.
Right,
it
was, Phil?
Yeah.
It still kind of is, because he'll get on me.
Yes, and it was amusing because, you know, you're speaking for everyone who wants to attend an event that has a theme and get dressed up. And Jason's very practical. Like, he can't wrap his mind around why you would want to attend a dinner event where you have to bring all the things with you.
No, he can't. And I have never managed to get him there. I've managed to get Dan Horn there. Some other people we'll talk about. And people you would like.
Even me.
Even you.
Even so. I have been your guest at Dinner en Blanc.
But never Jason.
Never. Well, I'm looking forward to this guest just because, you know, I have to tell you, before I went, I was on Team Jason. I was like, really? What? But no, it's a special event. We're going to hopefully get some behind the scenes intel
on how this
event comes together.
That is the goal.
All right. Well, let's keep things light. You know, there's enough politics and stuff coming down.
Don't worry,
pipe.
You guys. You'll be sick of it by the time November rolls around.
As we sit here now in our lavishly appointed podcast studio overlooking Paycor Stadium. Even though the Bengals open on the road in Cleveland, the Bengals are opening their season.
They are.
That's what's special about this week. They'll be in Cleveland playing the Guardians. And I think there's...
The Browns.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Duh. You guys.
See, but here's why.
You guys.
Here's why.
World loves
the Reds.
Here's
why. Because it's still baseball season in
it
Cincinnati.
Is, yes.
So I'm having trouble separating the two because as we sit here now, the Bengals are tied for that last wild card position in the NL. So
the Reds.
The Reds. Boy, you can tell it's been a long holiday weekend for me.
I know, but
yes,
you know what?
There is still viable baseball games happening for the Reds that matter because they're not out of the playoffs, and the Bengals are kicking off their season. So what a glorious time to be alive.
I know. I read
for
this
sports
morning,
fans in Cincinnati.
I mean, you guys, our sports writers are amazing. I read this morning that we're ranked number 4 without any game being played, and then I think if you follow the Bengals Instagram and TikTok like I do, religiously. I mean, if you asked me like 3 years ago if I was ever going to say those words aloud, I would be like, that's not true. But here we are. There's been just really a lot about Joe Burrow kind of like unveiling. He's back at practice. Clearly he had been practicing indoors and all is fine. So number 4, let's try number 1. Thank you.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Well, that is a good point. I mean, when Joe Burrow kind of pulled up with that leg injury, everybody thought, here we go again. Just like the past two seasons, he's going to start injured or he's going to, you know, start without, you know, working during the, you know, training camp. You know, last year, if you remember, he came back from that emergency appendix.
Yes.
Yeah, appendectomy, and looked like you would expect someone to look like who just got out of surgery. You know, he looked a little thin. He looked a little pale. He looked a little like unready to start the season, but he started it. And he did quickly make up ground. But they didn't start hot. They started a little slow last year because of that and some other factors.
I feel like it's going to be different because I feel like they gelled last year, and that all really is going to stay with them.
Well, I think that's what fans are really hoping for, a hot start, because you know,
we need to beat the Browns after last year on Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow.
Oh my God, who am I, you guys?
I think Joe Burrow is he's only won one time against the Browns, so they've got his number. But it could be very different this year. You know, the hot start's important too, because if they start off strong against, you know, their divisional opponents and they get into the playoffs, that means that they secure home field advantage. And man, wouldn't it be great if Paycor Stadium was the site for the AFC Championship this year?
Yes, it would be.
I mean, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but that's where the fans are right now. That's the optimism that they have. And I think it's well earned. This is a Super Bowl caliber team. Can you believe we're saying that? It still doesn't seem.
I can now at this
point.
Yeah,
it still seems a little weird. Well, while we're talking about the Bengals last week, as we record this, hosted their big annual fundraiser for the Free Store Food Bank. It's called A Taste of the Bengals. Fun event if you haven't gone to it, because a lot of players are there, a lot of alumni players are there. Like I was lined up to get a sandwich from Jeff Ruby's little food station there. And I stepped backwards and I felt like I was hitting a brick wall. I mean, I felt like I literally backed into a brick wall and I turned around. You know who it was? Hi. Icky Woods.
I've met Icky, so I could see that. Icky
waiting
is
for the
still...
same prime rib sandwich that I had just got. So, I mean, it's just a, you know, it's a fun, you know, access to the players. If you are fortunate enough to score a VIP pass, you can get autographs signed. There was a big line for Evan McPherson to get his autograph. Just a fun event. And, you know, the benefit, of course, is the Free Store Food Bank. And Kurt Reber, the CEO of the Free Store Food Bank, got up on stage and announced, like, I can't remember exactly, but one of the stats he shared that if you attend that event, your admission goes directly toward feeding at least 7 families. So, I mean, it's a significant give back to the community that the Bengals do, partnering with the Free Store Food Bank.
And Kurt takes that very seriously. He's been on the podcast before of like breaking it down in like real dollars for people of like where the money goes, with like keeping super low overhead on the things and always making sure that the money is going to families and then telling us that the money is going to families.
Right. So anyway, lots of excitement building up around.
I know it's going to be a fun fall, even though I'm sad to let summer go. I'm a summer girl. I lived in Fort Myers for a while.
All right, now we need your prediction, Sherry. Bengals versus Browns.
Bengals.
They want it.
By what? I'm not that good, girl. But when you want something as bad as they do, I think they go and they get it.
You think so? I'm going to say Bengals by 6.
Okay.
Yep. Bengals by 6. Write it down.
I actually will be following along for the predictions of Kelsey and Jason.
Oh, yeah.
And Charlie. I do follow, like, I kind of look at their predictions and everything. I go to the experts. Just like I hope people come to me for City Hall news, I go to them for my sports news.
Well, there you have it. Should we jump over to our special guest now? All right.
I should have worn white today. Welcome to special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. It's basically the podcast guest. If you're a longtime listener, that you know I've been waiting my whole podcasting career to host on That's So Cincinnati. Welcome, David Wertheim.
Thank you guys for having me. Always excited to come on and talk about this great event. So looking forward to it.
Which event would that be, Sherry?
Dinner and Blanc.
your most favorite event of all, I think.
It is. Paddle Fest is up there too, but Dinner and Blanc is, there's a lot of planning involved in it in the Coolidge household. Really, after the first year I saw, so we're in our 11th year of Dinner and Blanc, Cincinnati.
Yes.
And I saw it on social media the first year and I was like, what is that? And then I've been going ever since.
Yeah, well, like you said, this is our 11th year, technically the 10th anniversary, because there was no 2020 edition. And we're really, really excited to have it back this year. We've got a great spot picked out. Obviously, Sherry, as you know, can't really get into that. But
so let's talk about a little bit about what Dîner en Blanc is. Yes. I talked a little bit about it at the beginning of the podcast, but Dîner en Blanc is, it started in Paris, and it is basically a gigantic, kind of fancy picnic.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Which is, the location is a surprise, mm-hmm. and a group of people dress up in white and bring all of the things with them that you need to have, like a lovely picnic. Picnic baskets, your own food, tables and chairs, and it's always in a surprise setting. And the setting for this year, which is October 7th, also, so it's a secret. You don't find out until the last second. But part of the premise is just a gathering. I have met so many lovely people at Dîner en Blanc who've come from other cities. I'd love to hear what they think about Cincinnati. But the idea is to convene on a space and leave no mark that you were there at the end of the evening. And you bring everything with you and you take it all back when you're done. And it's such a fun event.
Yeah, Sherry, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head there. You should be one of my hosts here in the next couple of years. But yeah, Dîner en Blanc, super cool, unique event. Like you said, started in Paris. The founder of Dîner en Blanc actually was having a gathering with friends and they were going to meet in a big city park. And he said, well, how are we going to find everybody? And he finally decided, well, why don't you guys wear all white? That way I'll know that you're part of my group. We can find each other easily. Started with 100 of his friends and it's grown into a worldwide event. They've got it in Africa. They've got it in Asia, Caribbean, all across the United States. And we're lucky enough to host the Cincinnati chapter. So just another great year of Dîner en Blanc ahead on October 7th. And yeah.
So I should say that you're with Cold Iron Event Rentals. You're mm-hmm. the event manager. And it's kind of started a little bit more organically here with like a group of friends deciding to do it. It is a big undertaking. It is not 100 people. Are you able to say how many people come at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So at this time right now, we've got about 1,200 guests.
Okay, so not 100 people where like a group of friends could just be like, oh, that's easy peasy.
Correct. And that is already more than we had last year. So the demand this year is super strong. The city is really rallying behind this event. We still got a month to go at the time of this recording. So we're expecting numbers to get much higher than the 1,200. We're opening new groups as we speak, and there's plenty of opportunities for those who still want to get involved to do so.
All right. So even though it's a surprise venue, that suggests it's a large venue. Okay, there we go.
Must be large. So do you have a max? Like what's the ceiling on this event?
It's really up to the constraints of the space. We do have a large space this year. And so there really isn't a max per se. I will say that we will close registration, 10 days, 2 weeks ish before the event. So if you want to get involved, you got to do it soon. But in terms of actual space limitations, that's all it is. There's no hard cutoff. It would just depend on the size of the venue.
So it's been on Fountain Square. It's been in Washington Park. Mm-hmm. Last year it was on Central Avenue, which mm-hmm. was lovely. You kind of fly down Central Avenue and when we kind of like were there and we find out where it is, I was like, really? And then we were there. Central Avenue has lovely medians that are like all landscaped and it was so pretty. And I was like, I drive down here all the time, and it was a new look at things for me to just sit there and really enjoy our city. And, Burl, have you ever been to Dîner en Blanc?
Yes.
All right.
Invited by you, Sherry, last year was my first.
Full disclosure. Yeah. I've talked about it so much that last year I decided to bring Burl, and I love his wife so much. She's a friend of mine, and they came with us. And in addition to our group of people who go has grown.
So when you invited me, like the day of, because I was not first on her list, obviously.
Clearly.
I was, yeah.
I didn't think you would say yes.
Yeah. Well, I just kind of threw it out to Lauren. I was like, hey, she knew what it was. And I was like, do you want to go? And I could have gone either way. And she's like, oh my gosh, yes, yes, yes. So I went immediately to my closet, which is like closet in not Blanc, like
that's
grays
true.
And blues and blacks,
like, yes.
And whatever. So
Burl dresses moody, this, I would say.
So that was a thing. I had to get the proper attire, but you made it easy because you had all the logistics already worked out. You had your like Dîner en Blanc suitcase filled with your Dîner en Blanc place settings and napkins and whatever and tablecloths. And
so this event is not meant to be expensive. So you can, there's like, because it is a secret location, you sign up for it and it's not terribly expensive. You have to bring everything with you. And so I kind of thrift all year. And over the winter, this is after last year's dinner en blanc. Like over the winter, we were kind of like cleaning up the basement a little bit. I think I have like 20 place settings of white dishes that I've thrifted and like all of the things.
Well, and to your credit, I looked around like your competition. I'm doing air quotes here. You brought it. I mean, we were fancy. We had everything we needed.
There are people who really do it up.
Yeah.
I mean, tell us, like, this is.
Yeah. So in a lot of cities, they'll do contests, best dressed, best table setting, best centerpiece, et cetera. And we found that we're starting to get to the point here in Cincinnati where we need to do something like that.
Ooh.
Every year, everyone seems to go more all out. They find more stuff. You know, obviously, the more experience you have with the event, the better it's going to be. The more you have down, the more that you're just able to kind of know what's going on. When it's your first time, it can be a little complicated, right? I'm sure you experienced that yourself.
Yes.
And we rely on our previous members. We rely on our leaders. And we just find that the chain of command kind of creates an excellent atmosphere and allows for the new guests to kind of have a seamless transition and feel like they've been there for several years.
I mean, the bigger you go, the more committed, because you do have to bring everything.
Yes.
And there are people who are super, like the decorations can really, you know, need a lot of people for each part of the thing to bring. And of course, because it started in Paris, there's a lot of Parisian decorations, mm-hmm. Eiffel Towers. And it's part of the fun, though, to walk around and just look at what everybody does.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the Parisian influence, that's one of the trademarks of Dîner en Blanc, right, is the Parisian influence. They want only wine and champagne, for example. That's a rule. You can only bring wine or champagne because those are French origins. Typically, this isn't a rule in Cincinnati, but some cities will do it where men sit on one side of the table and women sit on the other side of the table, which again is a French custom. So there really is a lot of Parisian and French influence in this event. That's one of the things that makes it unique, right? The history, kind of the factors from all over the world, especially Paris and France, that are influenced in this event. We just try to bring a little slice of that here in Cincinnati, and it seems to be working out really good.
I mean, what made you and Cold Iron want to get involved in this?
It's a great question. The opportunity came available to us in 2019. The previous host contract had ended. And we decided, look, you know, this is something that we can add to our portfolio that is not something we do. Obviously, we're involved with things like Taste Cincinnati, Oktoberfest, Gettafest, a lot of stuff in Newport and whatnot. But this is a really one-of-a-kind event. You will not find anything like this anywhere else. And you know, people try. We've seen soirees en blanc and a bunch of different stuff around the city pop up in recent years, but nothing compares to the real thing. And just the amount of work that goes in, not only from us as hosts, but the corporate team up in Montreal, all of our volunteers, all the guests themselves, it really makes it one of a kind. There's nothing else like it. And we're just excited to be back again hosting for now our third event in our fourth year.
Are you able to say who the entertainment was? Because last year was a big brass band.
Yes.
Who I was not familiar with, and they were incredible, and really, people were really dancing.
So the brass band will be back.
Okay.
They will be back as our dinner music. And then at night, we have a dance band. I do know who it is. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
They are different than last year. We've had my sister Sarah for the last couple of years. They did a great job. But we wanted to change it up a little bit this year. So we're going with a different dance band, and I think people are really going to like it. They're very groovy, I'll say that.
But that's
I have some thoughts, but I won't throw them out there.
Okay.
Groovy, maybe. Though. That
groovy.
I mean, that narrows it
okay.
down.
Yes.
So like not an 80s cover band.
They'll probably play some. Okay. A nice mix.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that is part of the fun, though, the dancing. You're in a space somewhere in the city, like we've been at Sawyer Point, on the banks, and you're just, and there's a dance floor created. So as much as I'm like, oh, you just bring all your own things, I do suspect you do a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, there is a lot of work that goes into it. Absolutely. Yeah, we got to get our permits. Obviously, we have to line up the buses. which is a big deal. This year, we were luckily able to secure 10 charter buses. For those who attended last year's event, you'll know that it was school buses. This year, we were lucky enough to get those charter buses back. The demand has been crazy ever since COVID. So we were lucky enough to secure 10 of those this year to create more of that elegant experience. And then it's just a lot of work in terms of the logistics from our guests. You know, some people want to move tables. They want to move from this leader to that leader. They accidentally bought two meals instead of one meal. So there's a lot of those kind of questions that pop up before the event. But that's another thing our table leaders and group leaders are big helps with, is establishing that chain of command and making sure that the guests have several mouthpieces they can go to get their questions answered.
So tell me a little bit about Cold Iron, because I'm familiar with you as kind of like rentals, but clearly mm-hmm. you're an event company too. So explain the difference.
So Cold Iron started in the mid 80s, and we were originally a concession company. So we were vending beverages at special events. That is how we started, and that's how it was really up until the late 90s. In the late 90s, we noticed there's kind of a gap in the market, right? We were selling these beverages, but there weren't a lot of places at which to sell them. So we decided, hey, look, you know, we're going to start producing our own events. That way we can go ahead and sell beverages at them. So that's kind of how like the Great Inland Seafood Fest, for example, was born. That event's been running since the late 90s and it's still going strong today. And then in 2014, we established our rental division. So now we're really a one-stop shop. We do concessions, we do event production, and we do event rentals. And that acquisition has really allowed us to start producing more and more events every single year. We bring in new ones every couple of years. And we've just really grown ourselves from just a concession company to a true one-stop shop for anything event-related.
So you mentioned already some things that you're involved with. You said the Taste mm-hmm. Inland Seafood Festival. Where else would a Cincinnati festival goer see the Cold Iron operation?
Yeah, you'll see our red and white booths almost everywhere nowadays, it seems like. We're at St. Susanna's this week. We did some stuff with Taylor Swift, like I was mentioning earlier before we started recording. Oktoberfest Cincinnati will be all over the place. We're doing the electric there. We're doing tenting, concessions, Gleer's Ghetto Fest, Bacon, Bourbon, and Brew. We were up at VOA for the Country Music Fest doing concessions and rentals up there. So truly anywhere in the tri-state, you can find us. And it's just something that we're really proud about, right? Like you can come to us if you need 10 chairs for your backyard barbecue. You can come to us if you need, you know, a huge order for Oktoberfest Cincinnati, and we'll make sure it gets done and gets done right. So, pretty much anywhere in the city and anything you need, that's what we're able to take care of.
I think people take that part of it for granted. You know, like they go to an event and they just know that there's going to be tables and chairs. They know there's going to be tents. They know there's going to be, like you said, electric. Having been involved in a festival in this town, I know how big the logistics are.
That would be the Greek festival for our listeners. They
know, right? I mean, it's like setting up a little city and the permitting involved. Like, you know, when I got involved with it, it was shocking to me to learn that, you know, the large, big tents, they look like circus tents that you can eat under, require the same building level of building permitting as a fixed, you know, permanent structure because of the safety and all of that. So are you also involved with helping people navigate through that process, like the permitting and?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a great sales manager, Lane Butler. She does a great job for us. And she's really our permit wizard. She'll go down to the different offices and get that taken care of. And you're right. You know, it's very important. You need those to be structurally sound to ensure the safety of the guests. And that's something we take pride in as well, is that we're going to do it the right way every single time. So yeah, it's a lot more work than people think. I grew up in the business and was part-time all through high school and college, and then started working full-time after graduating. And I didn't even really know how intense it was until I started. And there is a lot that goes into it. And it's really a testament to the crew, that they're able to get it done each and every single day.
How long do you start planning out where you might have like next year's?
It's a great question. It really depends on the year. Sometimes, for example, last year, we knew it was going to be Central Parkway pretty early. We had some other hiccups. I don't know if you remember, we kind of released the date a little bit late. We had some bus issues and catering and whatnot. Luckily, we were able to get that smoothed out. We found a great caterer, Prime, who will be back this year. And so it just depends on the year, really. This year, it took us a minute. we weren't sure where we wanted to have it. We were looking at a couple of different sites across the city. We were looking at some parks. We were looking at some city streets, some other venues. And we found it. We finally settled on a great spot. I think we finally narrowed it down like June this year. But yeah, it really just depends on the year.
And it depends on all the other events happening.
Correct.
Like around the same time. And like, there's a lot of events in the city.
Correct. Yeah, there was some hiccup in terms of when Oktoberfest was going to be and other events in town that prevented us from really establishing a date until, you know, early July, late June. We finally settled on that early October date. We think that'll be a good time. It doesn't rain a lot in the city in October. It's a little bit milder. You know, we've had some balmy dinner en blancs in early September. So we think that this early October date will be a little more mild. And yeah, so I'm kind of excited. I think it'll be something different this year, having that date in October instead of September. I think that'll be a different experience. We'll have the trees and, you know, looking real nice, and the city will look really good. So we're super excited.
One of the things, and I'm not the pro that you are, Sherry. I've been to one. What I took away from that is that that event, I think, brought out so many different people that I don't see at other events in town. Like, one of the occupational hazards of our job is, whether we're covering them or attending them, we go to a lot of events. And this was not the usual suspects. I think it showcased the city's diversity in a way that I haven't seen in other events. It just brought out a whole different slice of Cincinnati, I think. And, you know, young, old, fancy, not so fancy, just, and everybody together having fun for what looked to me like just a, like you said, even though it's very fancy, it did have that casual picnic vibe to it, where you just kind of walk around and strike up conversations. Very different kind of event than what I think people are used to. Do you get that kind of feedback? And what do you have to do to preserve that so it doesn't kind of drift from that, what, you know, the special thing it has going for it?
That's a great point. And it's actually one of the principles of Dinner en Blanc, is that everybody is equal when they're on site. It's very important to us. And you're right, there's a lot of diversity, you know, young, old, any income level, any race, gender, religion, we don't care. As long as you uphold the principles of Dinner en Blanc, you're welcome to come back.
And what are they?
Join. But there's a lot. I have a 100-page document called the Book of Specs that Dinner en Blanc sends me every year. There's a lot, but
where do I get a signed copy of that?
Yeah, right. That's,
pause there for a minute. It's like serious business.
Yes.
To actually be the presenting host of Dinner en Blanc, because there are requirements. Mm-hmm. You just can't slap the name on it and do whatever you want.
Correct. There's a lot involved. From the beginning, from day one, when you say, hey, we want to do this again, you got to sign a contract. I signed an NDA, so I can't say where the location is. Obviously, I know where it is, but I legally cannot say where it is. And there is a lot that goes into it, you know, from what you can wear, for example, no off-white, no beige. It's got to be strictly white. No shorts. You know, you can only bring wine and champagne, no other alcohol. Your wagon has to fit under your table. The table has to be a certain size, between 28 and 32 inches. It has to be square. I mean, I could go on for hours and hours in terms of, you know, the rules and intricacies of Dinner en Blanc, but that's what makes it great. I mean, you know, you got to live up to what the requirements have been set, and that's part of the tradition and the history of the event and what makes it so unique. You know, you go to Oktoberfest Cincinnati, and it's a great and magical event on its own, but, you know, it's nothing like Dinner en Blanc, where, you know, everything is laid out.
A very different kind of event than showing up at a festival.
Correct.
You know, rolling around from booth to booth. I think we're doing a good job of describing it, but until you actually go and like participate in it, how difficult is it to enforce the standards?
That is another really good question. And I will say that it depends on the year. I'll say our table leaders and our group leaders do an excellent job. They are really into the event. That's why they're leaders. They volunteer their time, and they're able to uphold the rules and regulations that are set out by Daenerys Blanc International. And I've had leaders in the past who have turned people away for wearing shorts, for example.
This is true.
And they are given liberties to do so. I mean, that's part of their job and their responsibilities is we want them to uphold the rules and regulations that Daenerys Blanc International sets. I will say that once we get to the site, once the event actually kicks off, I don't really notice that many issues. The tables are usually the right size. Nobody's wearing off-white. I did have someone wear flip-flops last year. I wasn't too happy about that. No flip-flops.
So you saw me.
If you're listening out there.
You saw me. Dang.
Well, make it
two people who are wearing flip-flops then.
No, I was not wearing flip-flops. Sherry would not have tolerated
that. And I did when I asked him to come along. Our two people could not come. I understood. I was like, there's a lot of rules.
Yes.
and like my friends all know, like I kind of enforce the rules with our big friend group. But you did say, and I want to really go back to this, is I do like to go to a themed dinner. Like, you know, a bunch of us dress up in blue or what, and we do mm-hmm. it in a very fun evening. But you're with your friends.
Yes.
And you are not meeting new people, which you do at this event.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned that. I actually got an email this morning saying, I registered, but I don't know any of the people in my group. I said, well, that's the point.
If you're listening, you will meet friends.
Yes, you will meet friends. I know, you know, even me personally, I've met hundreds of guests at this event, and I'm proud to call them not only guests but friends now. My leaders, some of our other guests, you know, it's just a great relationship building event. You see the same people every year. We have guests who have been coming since the first event, and we have groups now that, you know, they're 10 tables strong, right? They'll sit with their friends every single year. We pick the same leader and we sit with the same people, and you know, it's just it feels almost like a family. It really does, and that's what makes it special.
Do you wear the same outfit every year or do you get a new one?
This will be my third year.
Okay.
I've changed the shoes every year.
Okay.
I've changed the shoes and I've changed the jewelry. Other than that though, the shirt stays the same, the pants stay the same. Our shirts, normally we wear red shirts with our Cold Iron logo at all of our other events. But at this event, I wear a white shirt with a gold Cold Iron logo. We call it our Gold Iron shirts.
So oh, that's cool.
Alex has basically had two outfits, like the first set that we went to, and eventually he switched his outfit. Mm-hmm. I change mine every year.
Yeah, I've seen both. I've seen people who change it every year.
The people watching for what, like the outfits and everything, it rivals the Taylor Swift concert because people really do it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was impressed. I didn't know what to expect, and I don't want to say I was dragged there kicking and screaming because originally
no,
I thought
you were into it.
I thought, well, this is probably isn't my vibe. This is kind of fancy. I didn't understand it, but I went in with an open mind, largely because Lauren was so excited to go. So
you're a good husband.
I had no really idea what to expect other than, you know, I heard you and Jason talking about it, our former podcast. Yes,
co-host.
Who went on he has a whole shtick about why it's not for him.
Because he doesn't like to get dressed up. There's
no,
a root cause there.
I think that is it.
Well, he and I would have fun though.
But I decided, you know, I was going to go in with an open mind. And it is something, if you've never gone, worth a try. And what I was going to ask is, how unique is it to Cincinnati? Do you have any idea like how many other cities in the States are staging the official Dinner and Blanc event?
I will say it was a lot more before COVID. There's not too many left. They just started one in Cleveland. Tampa has a big one. Atlanta has a huge one. Houston, Greensboro. But numbers have been declining since COVID. We're lucky enough this year, like I said, to already have surpassed last year's attendance. But it's been a problem for a lot of cities now since COVID. So I don't know exactly how many. I know they used to do one in Honolulu, for example, that they're no longer doing. So I think it just depends. You know, I think a lot of cities have had difficulties, but we want to bring it back. You know, in Cincinnati, if we can set a good example, we want it to do it in every city. You know, we want Dinner en Blanc to be a nationwide thing. And if we can do that, you know, in Cincinnati and maybe cause someone in Columbus or Indianapolis or Louisville to say, hey, this is pretty cool what they're doing down here. Maybe we should do it. You know, that's what we're going for. We want to help Dinner en Blanc International. We think this event is, you know, really cool, really worth it. And whatever we can do to help with that is
and I have met people from those cities who have come here and mm-hmm. like stay in a hotel.
Doing some scouting.
They bring everything. Not scouting, I don't think. They just want to come because they think it's fun. But they not only bring all the things that they need, but also stay in a hotel.
Yeah. That's commitment.
I know for a fact we have people from Tampa coming this year. We have people from all across the Midwest. I have a leader actually who is a group leader here in Cincinnati and also a table leader in Atlanta. There are people who do this in multiple cities. I'm actually looking to be a guest myself in a different city. We'll see which city I decide to choose, but I think that would be pretty cool to experience it from the other side as well, especially since obviously I know a good amount about the event. But yeah, I mean, it's truly a regional thing what we're able to do here in Cincinnati. We have guests from, you know, all across the Midwest, like I said, and that's part of the magic. You know, we want people to come in and experience what Cincinnati has to offer. It's very important to the Dinner en Blanc values that you showcase your city. And we just want to do that here in Cincinnati.
I think that's one of the reasons that it has been successful here. I think Cincinnatians do want to showcase their city. They take pride. I think it's when you talk about like, what are the things that make Cincinnati vibrant? I think part of that is the events and the diversity of the events. And I would put Dinner en Blanc on that, you know, the short list of things that if you say, well, what is there to do in Cincinnati? What is the social scene like? It's, I think, Dinner en Blanc and some others that actually help define that. So,
although I will say some of the things he mentioned, like we have the second largest Oktoberfest in the world.
Next to Munich.
Yes, yeah. Next to Munich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not sure if any other city has a Ghetto Fest. I'm going to just go out on a limb and be like, no.
Let's answer that question now. No.
No, that's unique to us. And so we do have good events like that that are only Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. There was actually a statistic that came out earlier this summer with the states that had the most festivals. And I think Ohio and Kentucky, I don't remember the exact list, but I think Ohio and Kentucky were 2 and 3. And I think if you were to extrapolate just Cincinnati and the greater Cincinnati area, so you include Northern Kentucky in that, might be number one by itself. So Cincinnati is definitely a festival town. Dinner en Blanc, a small piece of the pie, but, you know, obviously a very tasty one. And it's just something that, you know, is really unique, and you know,
I think that's what I was kind of trying to get at earlier. That, you know, if you want to go to a church festival, take your pick. Every neighborhood. In fact, I was cracking up in my neighborhood. It was, you know, in the height of church festival season, you could drive through the neighborhood and based on the yard signs, you could see like, oh, well, they go to that parish or they go to that church or whatever. So, you know, we have more food festivals than you possibly can have, you know, stomach room for, even though this is a dinner event. It's very different. I don't think there's a comparable event to it, at least in Cincinnati, that I know of. And you said there's some wannabes, there's people that kind of set them up, but this is the real deal. And you can attend a historically accurate Dinner en Blanc right here in Cincinnati. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, we've seen the neighborhood soirees pop up in the last several years, and we'd like to think they take influence from us, right? They must think, you know, this is a great idea. We want to try and replicate it ourselves.
Having been to those, I would say yes.
Yes, but it's not the same.
I'm going to start a competing dinner for me and Jason. It's going to be called Dinner on Cargo Shorts.
It's not the same.
Oh, wait, you can go to anywhere in Cincinnati and see
That's true, actually.
That is true.
All right. That will definitely be on display at Oktoberfest, which is coming up in 2 weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're excited for that. We'll be there for that as well. So come down and see us. And
it's on 5th Street this year, right?
It is on 5th Street. Yep. Moved it back. Obviously, there's a big function happening on Sunday right across the street from where we are right now. And so Oktoberfest will be moving up to 5th Street. But we think that's a great spot. You know, it's where they had Taste Cincinnati the last couple of years. And it's been great for the food vendors, been great for us, been great for the guests, and should be another raucous Oktoberfest downtown once again.
All right. So tell people where they can sign up to get some of these last spots.
Yes. So you can visit us at cincinnati.dinneronblanc.com. You'll want to hit the register tab and put your email in for the phase three wait list. We are still sending out invites correlating to the number of open spots. So not a guarantee you'll get in, but a decent likelihood here if you register in the next couple of days. Additionally, check us out on Facebook, Dinner on Blanc Cincinnati, and Instagram, Dinner on Blanc Cincinnati. A lot of good content there, pictures from the previous events, all that good stuff, and a lot of information you don't want to miss. So make sure you follow us on social media, check out the website, and let us know if you have any questions.
You might see photos of myself and Burl's wife. That was by accident. We did not know each other until today, which I'm shocked, to be honest.
Yes. Well, you know, my goal is to get to know each and every one of our guests. I always tell people when they email me or whatnot, you know, make sure when you're at the event, you come up and introduce yourself. Like we talked about earlier, that's part of the fun. You get to meet new people. And I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be able to be the host. It's really a magical thing. And it's my favorite event of the year.
All right.
Well, thank you for sharing. And we'll be talking about this more. I know, you guys.
And where's it going to be again? Just kidding.
No comment.
That's the mystique, too. That's kind of the fun part, having no idea where you're going to end up.
That's true. And part of the fun is like guessing where it might be, like using all the clues that kind of get dropped along the way, like where it might be.
And
Central Parkway was hard. You wouldn't think that it was going to be on a street like that.
It was hard. And last year, I remember right when we got on site, I posted a picture of like a tree or something that was close by. And a lot of people guessed it, and some of them got pretty close. I was a little scared for a minute there that we might get a little spoiler before the event. So I don't think I'm going to do that this year. Okay. You guys are just going to have to wait and see.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, this is basically the mic drop moment after an interview like that. I can't go to Dinner en Blanc this year.
What?
I know one of my best friends is getting married. And
that's just poor planning on her part.
Dinner en Blanc, to be fair, is a different weekend than it usually is, but you don't plan your wedding around it, apparently. So
I guess not.
I haven't even said anything. Well. She'll listen to this. I haven't even said anything about it because I'm very excited about her wedding.
So that ends a streak for you, right?
I've missed one the year. The first one, I actually missed two. I didn't go to the first one because I didn't know about it. And then there was one, a surprise one that was in the summer. They wanted to have it at the Cincinnati Museum Center, which was a lovely setting. But I didn't expect it to happen in the summer and we were on vacation. Some things. I have to say, that happened to be a European vacation and you don't really cancel that to go to Dinner en Blanc. And when one of your best friends is getting married, you don't change that either. There's certain things, but most
fair
things.
Enough. Fair enough. You get a pass from me anyway. Yeah. All right. So when we talk about Cincinnati moments, I think we have to address a kind of sad moment for Cincinnati and the nation, but particularly hitting Cincinnati hard. And it caused you, in fact, to kind of suspend your holiday break and jump into action to report on this. And what I'm talking about is the death of Jimmy Buffett.
I woke up, well, most people did on Saturday morning. The news broke overnight that Jimmy Buffett died, and he just meant so much to this city. And, you know, I was really kind of like looking back through our old articles and everything. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and which is super sleeping in for me. The Coolidge boys were still sleeping. I was like, I'm going to do this anyway. I was like, I should just write a story.
No, I'm glad you jumped into action because you were, you know, very familiar with what he meant to this city. And for those who don't, let's just kind of just take a quick step back. You know, Jimmy Buffett in his heyday sold out multiple nights at Riverbend.
And before that, Timberwolf, which I had to go down the Timberwolf.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, what?
I don't
the
know.
Kings Island venue.
I don't think there were too many other cities that had such a loyal and passionate fan base for Buffett's tour to, I think at the peak, it was three nights, sold out
it
nights
here.
It
had to be. In 35 years at Riverbend, 54 shows. I mean,
that's just an amazing thing. And, you know, I guess we should be proud of the fact that we have per capita the highest number of parrot heads. We would have to say that. I can't think of any other.
That term was that apparently coined here.
It was. I remember my first tour of duty at the Enquirer. We actually invited Buffett fans that, to wear their concert attire into our office, into our studio, into our newsroom, and we would take their picture and put together these phenomenal, photo galleries of Buffett fans. And the, I think the first year we did that, we just kind of casually threw it out there. And we were overwhelmed by the number of people that came. I mean,
That's so Cincinnati.
I think the news hit Cincinnati hard. I think there were people, I know there were, all over my social media feeds sharing their pictures over the years of going to Buffett concerts in full parrot head regalia.
We went every few years. We didn't go every year. I was shocked at how hard it hit me, to be honest. I mean, I loved him. I lived in Fort Myers, and his music was very familiar to me, but it hit me harder than I thought because he's so synonymous with our city.
I think it made people very sad, and we have him to thank for one of the best Cincinnati name drops in music history.
This is where Jason would sing, Burl.
Jason Williams.
I cannot sing.
Well, I mean, we could end the podcast going out with all of us singing Finns, right?
Nobody wants me to sing.
Nobody wants you to sing?
No, I've said this here before. When Jack finally could talk, he's like, shh, mommy, don't sing.
Well, in case anyone was wondering how long it takes to get from Cincinnati down to somewhere in Florida, somewhere in the Keys, it takes 3 days by the train.
That's right.
Oh, it's so sad. Anyway, well, that was the moment we have to end on
and
today.
Honor it.
Yeah,
yes.
In honor of Jimmy Buffett. Anyway.
There was many a margarita drink on Saturday at the Coolidge House after the story was done.
Oh, I think all across Cincinnati people were, I bet you if there was a way we could do this, I bet there is a way to see large markets in the U.S. And rank them by Jimmy Buffett streams this weekend.
I bet there is a way to look at that.
I bet you Cincinnati would be top five.
I had it on a loop. So we started with Jimmy Buffett essentials, but quickly we're like, no. But then there were so many songs. If you just put in Apple Music, Jimmy Buffett, then you really could go down the rabbit hole by the end of the day on Sunday. You're like, what song is this?
We were so nostalgic. Lauren was flipping through channels trying to watch something on TV, and I was sitting there not paying attention. And I, we have a smart TV, so I called up a couple live Jimmy Buffett performances, and without her knowing it, just shot it over to the TV. And she's like, "Oh!" And then, because the rabbit hole that is YouTube, the next up was highlights of his interviews on 60 Minutes. Which was just so fun watching, kind of the Jimmy Buffett story, things you didn't realize. And here's where I felt really old. So, he broke through with the song Come Monday. That kind of put him on the map.
I did think that was fitting because it was about Labor Day.
I totally. And then of course Margaritaville came out and made him a star. And after Margaritaville came out, he went 17 years without a song hitting the charts, but came back on the charts when Alan Jackson, who at the time was at the peak of his career, invited him to do It's 5 o'clock Somewhere. And that song came out in 2001.
I know.
It's 5 o'clock Somewhere is more than 20 years old.
See, to me, it feels like it's just always been.
In a way, you're right. It seems like it's always it's been a part of the American songbook.
When I read that, I was like, that just was since 2001. That's interesting.
Well, all I got to say is it is 5 o'clock somewhere. Even though record this, it's early afternoon. It is 5 o'clock somewhere. Yeah. So,
cheers.
Phil, pour me something cold and strong. Or wait, pour me something cold and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. There we go.
That's the closest we're getting to singing today, you guys. But
next time we'll sing. All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.